Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
This has been a very special day for a great Aussie Christian institution celebrating a great work of service over 200 years. Yes, it all began in 1812 when a group of men who called themselves Wesleyans, motivated by bringing faith and hope to a newly white settled nation, met at the Rocks in Sydney. It was Australia's first Methodist gathering. And two centuries on this day, the Wesley Mission has staged an historical reenactment, a march through the city, and a large Celebrate 200 event. It's an important day to mark with the Superintendent of Wesley Mission, Keith Garner. Keith, I'm so glad to welcome you to Open House.
Lee, it's always a pleasure to
talk to you. Great to see you. Thank you. There's a great deal that's come together to mark this day, hasn't it?
Oh, look, it has. And we've really believed that 200 in Aussie terms is really quite something, you know.
Yes, indeed.
When I came from the UK, I used to think 200 wasn't very much, but yes. I actually realised it is a very significant time. And 200 years ago, well, in a number of places, in Windsor and Richmond and in Castlereagh, but for us at Wesley Mission in the Rocks area of Sydney, a small group of people met together. And today has been a bit about history, but it's straddling the past and the present and looking into the future. And Wesley Mission's story is an amazing story,
sure,
of which I'm only just a little part of it, and I'm able to share in it now when I look back at some of the amazing things that have happened, really, and the fact that here we are all these years later and still at the heart of the city and in so many places across the state of New South Wales and even beyond.
What a privileged position to be in. So over these two centuries, what do you say are the elements that have undergirded this movement over so many years and such a diverse range of activities as well?
Look, I think it's been a willingness sometimes to sit on the edge and take risks. That's certainly been a part of our story. We haven't just sat back and waited for things to happen. We've made them happen. I think you'd have to say we've been willing to speak out when it's been necessary for a Christian prophetic voice to be spoken. And I can think of, you know, many things that we have spoken out about. I think it's also that realization that first and last, we are combining word and deed. We're about Jesus Christ. So we're about the gospel of saving grace, no question about that. But we're also about caring for people with a real compassionate spirit. And I can say that in this Olympic year, if you like, that the baton's been passed on from one generation to the next, and no generation has ever outshone another.
Yeah.
It's been just one story.
So let me take you back to these Wesleyans who first gathered back in 1812. For those not that familiar with the Wesley name, why did they take on that name, and what was the Wesley Mission all about?
Well, look, they begin with John Wesley, the story of John and Charles Wesley in the 18th century, this Anglican clergyman who really had his life turned around. He went out to America believing that he was going out to be a missionary and came back and more or less said, you know, I went out to convert others, but who's going to convert me? And John Wesley had this amazing transformation of his life in May 1738, and the story grew from there. And from very small roots in a Moravian meeting in London, the work grew. And so eventually the work spread to Australia. And Lee, I have to tell you, some of the people who started the work must have been good, because they were sent out by some of the best judges in England, these people were.
Very Aussie story.
And so the beginnings were in people who came out here as freemen to work in education. But Edward Eager was a very famous Australian name, and he was sent out here for fraudulent behaviour. But while he was in prison, before he came out, he was converted to Christ. And so they had a passion to really bring something different. And Governor Lachlan Macquarie was very reluctant at first about these Wesleyans and Methodists, because he said, I've got enough problems with the Catholics and Anglicans, you know, fighting the Protestants and Catholics, as he called them.
Yep.
But in a way, the Wesleyans didn't really want to take either of those names on. They saw themselves as Christians and not wanting to get involved in the sectarian stuff.
Yeah.
So they made a name, and the Reverend Samuel Lee came out here, and from that the work grew. And we at Wesley Mission trace our a very proud history from those beginnings.
So it wasn't an institutional name so much, or
no,
pursuit.
The title Methodist, which is where the Wesleyans come from, was actually a pejorative name at first. In Oxford, when John was there, people said, they're so methodical, they're Methodists. And it was meant to be something that was pejorative. I suppose not unlike maybe they were called Christians first at Antioch. It may not just be something that they embraced, but they said themselves, let's let's take it. If that's what they want to call us, we'll be it. Yeah. And so the Wesleyans proudly held that. They stood for values that were important. And I think that in a colony that was developing, the discipline of faith that they brought, their small group work, their willingness to have a disciplined faith, really did fit as being the need of the hour.
Yes, can you paint us a picture of what early life was like in the colony and where the church or where the Christian community fitted in there?
Well, they met in a cottage firstly near the rocks, and then there was the first of our churches that became Wesley Mission, was the Princess Street Chapel, which is in the approaches to the Sydney Harbour Bridge. And I think this group of people were first and last small in number, but it grew gradually, and the work always grew gradually. And then, of course, there were fits and starts in the history, and I could tell you that our story has not just been one of massive growth. In fact, anybody reading the Wesley Mission story would say, how have they survived? Because we went through a time when there was great growth and then decline, because in the middle of the 19th century, life in the middle of Sydney changed, and people moved out to the suburbs and took with them their wealth and their resources. So the Methodists in what was known as Old York Street Chapel continued to stay there, and they believed it was important. And so they actually had a man called W.G. Taylor, a very, very honoured name in Australian history, one of the great Australian evangelists, and he was put in charge. And the work grew again, you know, and our histories have been a bit like that. We've had the celebration in the Great State Theatre. Why there? Well, because in the 60s, Wesley's Lyceum Theatre burnt down.
Yes, yeah.
And Alan went straight away to see what he could do about it. And by lunchtime, the State Theatre had said, you can come here for all your worship and your Good Friday events. And so the State Theatre became a home. So when we had to find somewhere, we needed somewhere that held over 2,000 people for the crowd that would be there. And so he really did decide this is an appropriate place, and we thought for a special celebration couldn't be anywhere better.
When you speak of Alan, he's the man I wanted to get to among many in the story of Wesley Mission, the Reverend Alan Walker, one of the giants of this story, a real dynamo and a lion through those critical years of quite massive social upheaval through 50s, 60s, 70s.
Yes, look, Alan Walker was somebody I knew, because it's part of the reason why I came to Australia, because I shared in a mission in Plymouth in the southwest of England where I was a minister, and he came to do a mission when he was the World Methodist Evangelist. And Alan and Wynne were people I knew a little about, and of course we've lost them now in recent years, but yes, they were giants. I remember talking to a very prominent Australian who said to me, in their mind, he was possibly one of the greatest Australian Christians born here. Mm. Really have made a difference, and I think that's true. But Alan was a very shy person. He wasn't an extrovert in as an individual, and I remember those early days being a bit frightened of this guy, because he would be in the vestry about, and he wouldn't say very much, you know, and I thought, something odd about this man, you know. But when he got into the pulpit, and he opened his Bible and he talked about Christ and he talked about the issues of the day, he was unafraid to declare what he believed.
And certainly in the public space as well, because he was a very significant public figure.
Look, Wesley Missions always believe we should actually do that. It's vital that we speak. Now, think of the all-white policy in Australia, the Vietnam War. Alan got many, many people. And while we're in a radio station, without telling anybody this, let me tell
just
you,
between you
there,
and
is a there is a radio station. I won't mention them by name. And Alan used to have pleasant Sunday afternoons, and on the pleasant Sunday afternoons he would broadcast, and it would go out live on the radio. Yeah. And as you know, often when these things go on, there's a red light and a green light, and the people would be there, and they'd always be there. But Alan wasn't afraid of controversy.
No.
And it was at the time of the Vietnam War, and I think it was a New South Wales election coming up, and Alan came towards the end of the show, and Alan said, well, as far as I'm concerned, the election's coming up, you should all go and talk to your Member of Parliament, and if they agree with the Vietnam War, if they think it's right, don't vote for them, you know. And immediately the red light came on.
Which in that day and age was a very significant stand to take for a churchman.
Yes, but I think history's probably moved him, right? Really, as Christian people reflect on Vietnam, it was not the best time in our history, really. And he talked about that in Christ. In terms of the all-white policy, questions of abortion, questions of family life, he stood up for all those things at a time when it was important to.
And a very strong voice for Christian faith in our community as an evangelist.
Sure. And never afraid to declare the name of Christ. Now, I have to say, whenever we do this, if you're an organisation like us, you put yourself a little bit at risk because people say, well, these are meant to be for all people. As you know, we're involved in social welfare work. What we make a distinction is we stand for real values, but we are indiscriminate in our care of all people. So when Alan made these statements, we always lost a few donors every time, but we always gained some as well, because some people sat back and say, good on the church for saying that that's right. So you lived a little bit with that. But I think that Alan probably, in that sense, he paints the picture of what has been the very best an evangelist in our tradition is.
Yes. On Open House, we're with Keith Garner, the superintendent of Wesley Mission, on a very significant day for his movement. One of the things, as I researched the Alan Walker story, I found that he launched a teenage cabaret, a dance for young kids, again at a time when many in the church would have frowned on modern music or even dancing.
Oh, look, there's a lovely story in the Methodist Church of a president in the British Church, and they were debating should there be dancing in church, and somebody asked from the floor of the conference, Mr. President, give a ruling. Can Methodists dance or not? His answer was, well, some can and some can't, you know. Really, I mean, Alan just wasn't bothered about the fact that there were church people that found this. And I think Wesley Mission, because it's not really that churchy, if I say it in that way, has not been afraid of doing that. And there are literally hundreds of people who can trace their faith back to those cabarets, back to the single society. Even that in its day, single society was quite entrepreneurial, really.
Yeah.
And they had rock and roll music, they had folk music.
Their numbers were huge.
Oh, yeah, look, there were. I mean, in the fellowship hall, there'd be 500 a night just gathering to do that. And they were never afraid to name Christ in the context of it. That's the clue to it all, really. And I think we've done that. And Vision Valley is also another part of that amazing Wesley Mission story for youth camps. And one of Alan's family was involved in running a special camp. It was after the time of Woodstock and all of these kind of things were going on. They said, we should be having a Christian festival.
I remember it.
Yeah.
I remember
it. But you'd be young then, Lee, you know.
The old days. Yes. But it was a highly significant outreach into the normal community.
And indeed, we'd also want to say that part of our story is also Dalmar, the wonderful work with children, many that came here from other countries and landed in Australia, you know, with just their name on a piece of paper. And it's been an amazing story of different places and still today working in that space, caring for children and young people.
And we must not and cannot forget Lifeline that we have today that's been literally a lifesaver to countless numbers of people. That was Alan Walker's idea.
Yes, I mean, Alan Walker said that when Lifeline was born, it came because of the discovery of the telephone and the power of the telephone. He was being bothered many, many times at home by people who really were at the edge of their lives. And so he said, we've got to do something about it. So gathered the leaders and elders of the church together and said, we'll have to do something. And that's how Lifeline was born. On top of that, we now have Life Force. We have a whole pile of counselling services for people with debt. And all of that really grows out of this vision that we've got to be in the community offering services in the space that isn't churchy but isn't afraid to do it.
And be available. I mean, it's noteworthy that a modern Christian leader could have his telephone known by these people, telephone number.
Oh, right? Sure. Look, Alan was more modest than people really realise. It was certainly true that he's this public person. But, for example, when he was offered a knighthood by the Queen, it was a real agonising moment for him. Should I accept this? Because, to some extent, this is really not for me, it's for others. And that's how the Spirit, he accepted it. He said, I'll take this, but it's for the work of Wesley Mission and the work that we're all doing. And I think that tells you a little bit about the nature of the person. And I would like to think the nature of the organisation, that it's best.
Yes. So, my friend, with that sort of heritage, it must have been a daunting prospect, and knowing Alan Walker and the history of this movement, taking onto your own shoulders the superintendent's job of Wesley Mission. This was in 2006.
Yeah, what I did was I came out here to a sabbatical, and I contacted Gordon Moyes, who was the superintendent then, because I'd worked with Alan, and said I'd like to just, you know, do something useful while I'm here. And I went back to Britain after spending a few weeks here in the work, and people back there said, what was Australia like? And I said, it's very nice. I could never live there, you know. I said, you know, but I thought it was a great place to go.
Should have said that.
And then I was actually on Eleuther, which is a Bahamian island, doing an evangelistic mission. And we went into the local library because it was the only place where there was any internet access. And it was one of the, it took about 3 years to log on, you know, in those days.
Remember
and,
that.
And we got on, and Carol was actually sat there on the screen, and I said, is there anything I need to look at? And she said, you better look at this one. And there was an email from Australia saying, we're doing a worldwide search, and da-da-da-da-da. We'd like you to consider accepting, you know, and it was, that was an amazing moment. Yeah. And coming here was a very, very big step. Having worked in the church in Britain and being known in many places, I came here and, you know, within 5 minutes, people would say, who's he? What are you doing about? But in a way, that was very, it was good, really, because it puts you in perspective.
Because, again, it's off the back of another giant of the modern era, Gordon Moyes.
Sure.
A very prominent man.
Absolutely. And Gordon did an amazing job of building the services and modernising so much of what we do. And I pay tribute to everyone who's gone before.
Yes.
And yet I know that that baton's in my hand now. I can't drop it. And one day I've got to hand it to somebody else. But I do know and do believe this, that Wesley Mission is uniquely placed to speak the name of Christ in Australia and in this great city of Sydney where we work.
So was it a daunting thing to come out here and take all that on
your
shoulders?
Oh, sure. Look, it was, and it wasn't easy because we have three children. We now have three grandchildren and a fourth on the way. And I don't look old enough to be grandfather, but
I know that feeling.
I've got all that that going. So that was hard in a personal sense.
Yes.
It was hard in a church sense because you've done everything. You've been everything. And I was quite comfortably set, really, I thought, for the rest of my life. But my life turned around. But then again, when I think about it, the whole Christian story, from that moment when somebody on a road was transformed, and I think the Christian story has been one of transformation from Saul to Paul. We're all on that journey. And for me, it's part of that. And I have to say, I wouldn't want to miss this interview without saying this, that whatever I say about Wesley Mission, it's only because of our people, our staff, our congregations and our volunteers that we're ever anything that we are today.
What's it done to your own faith? What have you learnt over these last, say, 6 years since you've been in this very significant job that's grown you?
A little bit to trust when things don't go so well in a public place, to give things time. Sometimes we like things to happen overnight, and really some things only happen after a period of time. And we were in the middle of that pull of governments. We lost a lot of employment contracts at one time. We've seen a renewal of some of our contracts. We've seen a marvellous growth in our out-of-home care. But it couldn't happen if you wanted everything to happen overnight. So I've had to learn that trust that comes with that. I've had to trust other people too. When I came out here, I was used to having a diary. I haven't had a diary in my hands for years. My EA said to me, she looked at this paper diary I had in my hand and said, what are you doing with that? You know, just, you can't have
drag
that.
Drag you into the modern era.
So my world has had to be controlled by others. And I think that takes a little bit of trust. I think the willingness to sometimes step out and say things to people in politics and life has not been easy. But I think there are things to say. Lee, I'd have to say, I think still in Sydney, we have issues. The greatest evil in terms of a drug is in a bottle, and it's bought anywhere in Australia. We have the issue of the fact we're fighting for Sunday. The only Sunday we've got left now is Easter Day. You know, there are masses of issues that we shouldn't be afraid of saying them. And I've never found political leaders or people mind hearing it. It's how you say it that matters. We don't make a judgment of others, but we've got to be bold enough to do it.
You're still clearly convinced that the Christian voice needs to be put out there in an essentially secular society.
I am, and I try and do it the best I can. And I think all of us have a job to do that in our workplace and in the context in which we're in, without rudeness, without offence, without irritation and gripe, but certainly making a clear voice for Jesus Christ.
I well remember many Good Friday mornings when you would pop in at Sky News and help us out on our coverage, giving us hope and faith on such a day. It's a very important voice.
Yeah, well, I think that we should be saying that. It's wonderful to be here at this station because this is a Christian station and that's vital for people to hear that. But it's also important for us to be in that secular space too.
Yeah.
And not to think that everybody's going to immediately fall over everything you say, but try. There's a lovely phrase that the Scottish had of their preachers. They say, speak a good word for Jesus. And I think that's what I try and do.
Out of the no doubt hundreds and hundreds of people and stories that you could relate to us, that perhaps encapsulates why this has both been sustained over these 200 years and why it should have been sustained, is there anyone that strikes you in particular?
Yes, it happened a week after I'd arrived here. I received a letter from somebody from Asia, and I opened it. There was $100 in this envelope and a letter, and it said in it that this person's family life had fallen apart 30 years earlier, and they went to the Wesley Mission and they gave them food, and actually their family was able to survive what was a disaster, and now he was a multimillionaire businessman in Asia. He said that, I'm not going to send my name, he said, but I want you to take this $100, maybe because he thought I might ask for $100,000, I don't know, but he said, take the $100 and feed a couple of other families, because you never know what you do. And I thought, fancy somebody remembering that. And I think that, for me, says that what you do not always know. And there are many, many people out there who kind of tell stories that make me feel at least what we're doing is on the right track.
Sure, that's true. For 200 years now. Keith Garner, thank you so much indeed for joining us on Open House.
My pleasure.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.